Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes.
Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet.
What's happening, everybody, and welcome to this, the latest episode of Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet, where in a week that Roman Reigns announced that he kicked cancer's ass, we are here to talk about something which has been 5 years of absolute epicness and brilliantness, and lots of words that I could go on all day talking about, as we're talking about the history of NXT TakeOver. We'll be going through what we've voted as the greatest matches in NXT TakeOver history, and it's pretty much just going to be 90 minutes of us talking about probably the best thing in the WWE product. You can debate it all you want, David Hockney. It's true.
You got the best thing on WWE right
now. No, nowhere near it.
Bugenhagen.
But before we digress, let's meet today's panel. First, much like Brexit and Pat McAfee, he just won't go away. He is the ESSR champion, Scott McLeod.
How dare you compare me to Pat McAfee? I triumphed in taking back what I should never have lost in the first place at the Square Goal.
Yes.
I like he didn't mind being compared to Brexit.
Right, fine, that. Are we not to let Pat McAfee is worse than Brexit?
Next up is the new president of the Angelico's Crotch Fan Club, as of course,
Oh, I'm not going to live that down.
Could you explain to the listeners?
Right, someone took a picture of me while I was taking a picture of Angelico. It just so happened that through his legs, you can see me taking a picture, and it looks like I'm a creep.
Looks like.
Alright, okay, everyone knows I'm a bit creepy. Everybody knows, but now it's more common knowledge than what it was before.
God. Next up, he's turned heel so many times that he's dizzy and has no idea what year it is, which explains why he thought Jeff Jarrett's recent Raw appearance was pretty damn normal. It is, of course, James Murphy.
Was he not in the Square Goal?
Yeah.
I can't keep track of Jeff Jarrett. I mean, I thought he was all done for with that. Is he not doing a pyramid scheme selling gold on TNA? I'm sure he was. It was Global Force Wrestling gold? I don't know. He comes out with his essential oils. I think.
Oh, that was something, James. That's probably priceless.
My gold!
Good to have you back on the show.
It's fine.
Next, he claims to be the greatest of all time, but he can't arrange a simple trip back from Spain properly. That's David Campbell.
I will say that the 4.5 hour car journey from Valencia to Barcelona was very scenic. So it was worth it for something.
David, you're very modest about what your events of the weekend. Are you spare change in the tin holder?
I am the new spare change in the tin holder, but really I like to think of myself as the Roscoe insurance policy. As long as I'm around, Scott McLeod's championship reign will be very, very safe.
Yeah, asks you loads of stupid questions before it puts out.
I need this back up with the Mania quiz coming in a few weeks.
Watch it, you two.
And rounding off our panel, they say you can't choose your family, which is the only plausible reason why I associate with this man. It's Gary Gilbert.
Well, the feeling is very much mutual, Stephen.
I had to make, I slagged Derek equally last week. I had to do
Well, I like to refer to some of my cousins, and especially my brother Derek, as simply as spare parts. You never know when you might need a spare kidney.
To be fair, if you met us, you would understand. It's a very accurate representation.
Derek immediately closes his lawyer to change as well.
And finally, he's the nugget with the ego as big as his cable package. This is Kwaku Ajay.
Oh, you got my name right this time around, thank you.
Yes, I've learned after various days of pronunciation training.
Yeah. It took you 2 years to know how to spell my surname.
That's true, I was very bad at doing that one. So yes, we are here to talk about the history of NXT TakeOver. If you've never listened to us before, we have a massive back catalogue bigger than certain things. I guess for yourself. Make sure to subscribe to us. We're on all good podcasting sites, Android, iTunes and Spotify. We're also on all social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Suplex Retweet. If you like what you hear, please give us a rating. Be generous. We're not just people who slag each other and claim to be friends. Or spare parts.
I actually had the wrong idea about the show for years.
Yeah. Sorry, I should probably note to the listeners that David bought Schlur for him. Scott and his
Well, we Scott are in the middle of our championship and spare tin celebration right now for Roscoe. Yes. We are half
I'm quietly sitting here. I'm enjoying this moment.
Never complain.
Sitting there with his pinky
out. Never.
See, I never complain.
We are outlining what we've voted as the greatest NXT TakeOver matches. Now, to let the listeners know, we went through a rigorous process of choosing our 8 matches.
It was
random chance.
It was painful.
Yes, we each, between us, we all picked what was the best match on each respective TakeOver, so that narrowed it down to 24, which was quite hard because it was someone's late TakeOver New Orleans that had 2 5-star matches. Mm. And after that, we then ranked each of the matches from 1 to 24. The rankings were combined, and that's how we got our 8 matches. The panel have went through a lot of pain in the last couple of weeks.
Yes.
It didn't help you calculate. Tell us, hurry up with your rankings. Like, how can I choose? They're all so good.
Should have done McQuacken, didn't they miss half them out? So, we've got 8 matches. We're going to pick them all from the worst of the 8 to the best. Now, we're going to start today's show by going through 2 matches, which were joint 8 and 7. Now, our scores are going to be out of 168 for those of you at home who are trying to figure out these rounds. A bit of an insight for you all. I feel like Dave with my stats here. Alright, so the first 2 matches we're going to talk about, they took place at NXT TakeOver Dallas and NXT TakeOver War Games 1. It is the matches between Aleister Black and the Velveteen Dream and Sami Zayn versus Shinsuke Nakamura, which got a score of 114.
Ooh.
Respectively. Let's start with Black versus Dream. I'm going to go to James on this one. James, this was a match that I think many people thought performed above expectations.
There was one thing that stood out to me from this match, and it was when Velveteen Dream taunted Aleister Black throughout the match. And then at one point, Aleister Black has him on the back foot, and he just says in his, I'm not trying to offend him, your slightly strange Dutch accent, he says, "Enjoy infamy, Velveteen Dream," then Black masses him across the face and ends the match. I really liked that, because this was the match that made Velveteen Dream into the star that he is today.
Yeah.
This was his defining moment. And he had great matches in NXT, but this was his Austin and Bret Hart. It was great. It was... The difference between that is it's two bigger than wrestling personalities. Velveteen Dream's got his very showmanship, Prince, standing in the limelight gimmick, and Aleister Black has his aura of almost sort of like pure presence, I would say, as opposed to showboating. Mm. He's all integrity and he's all show. Mm. And this was the match that really put almost both of them on the mat. Obviously, Aleister Black had great matches, but this was the first one where you went, okay, wow, I know what his character is now.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully this is the match they look to when they put Aleister Black or Velveteen Dream on the main roster.
Yeah, you're spot on, David. You kind of said it there. A lot of people wrote off the Velveteen Dream gimmick when it first came about, and then this was kind of the thing that kind of brought them to a lot of people's attention.
I think a lot of people were worried it was going to go the same way as a Tyler, a Breeze, or Adam Rose, in that it was all gimmick and no. It was all sizzle and no stake. That, I think that's what people were worried about. But in this match, it's like what James is saying, he showed he wasn't just that. He showed he was a fighter, he showed he was a warrior at the same time, and he also showed he was a viable underdog babyface, which they finally seem to sort of be doing him with him now. They've turned him into this dual role as the arrogant showman, but also this guy that you can't help but get behind. And this was the match that sort of showed that duality to the Velveteen Dream character. I'm directing a film right now, and our first table read, I got all the cast to watch this match because I was like, look how well invested in the characters and how much they encapsulate the roles they're playing. Aleister Black and Velveteen Dream are, and that's what I wanted to show them, just how these people totally get the idea of kayfabe and to stay invested in a gimmick.
Was Aleister Black not the babyface in this match?
It was the babyface in this match, but the way the match was put together, the sort of the strikes that Velveteen Dream took and managed to get back up from, it just showed the crowd started to get behind Velveteen Dream more than they go behind Aleister Black here.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people touch upon the Velveteen Dream character, but they say Aleister Black was more, he was pretty much a striker in a lot of his matches before this. This is when we first started to see some sort of character development in Aleister Black.
Oh, definitely. I mean, what people tend to actually thought about Aleister Black is that he was just this mysterious guy. He would just not say a word, he wouldn't cut a promo, and it did leave you wondering what was actually going on with his character. Mm-hmm. And it's like literally come in, hit you, and he buggers off. Basically, that's all it really was. Mm-hmm. But it's not. I felt like this was actually the big development in his character. Like, you actually start to see a little bit more character come out of Aleister Black simply because of Velveteen Dream. But they two mashed off against each other so well. Like, even in the lead up to the match, during the match. I mean, it was a point of like him not giving him any attention, and we all know what the Velveteen Dream is like. Like, I had been backing him since the very beginning, like when they had like the wee vignettes, and I was like, oh, what's this? What's going on with this?
Yeah.
And plus his trousers. His trousers.
You mentioned the lead up to the match, Sarah. They had that "Say My Name" part to it.
I know, that could have taken him from my name.
Where he sort of almost was dismissive almost, or Black was dismissive of Dream, and then as we got that moment, as James mentioned, just at, towards the end of the match, where he acknowledged them for the first time, he had that moment of respect. And then that moment of respect before he kicked his head off.
Yeah, Scott, it was a nice nod at the end of the match where he kind of, Velveteen looks like he's been out on the lash for 3 weeks crawling across the mat, and then Black just goes, Velveteen.
Yeah, you look at these matches, like, obviously they're all great matches, but as well as that, you can constantly talk about the stories behind them and how invested you'll get. And I think when you really think about trying to explain to somebody more, a bit more casual to NXT, well, what's the story about this? Well, he wants me to say his name. They might not get that at first.
This flamboyant character wants this creepy.
But it's the whole thing, like, he wants the attention, and Black knows that, so he refuses to get, like, even if Romy called him Patrick, he wouldn't call him Velveteen Dream.
Brilliant.
And, like, the whole crowd was chanting to say his name, and the pop he gets when he finally does say it, like, just, like, you don't see that. Like, something so simple, yet everyone's so invested in it.
It was quite good as well. We kind of got, he wasn't really in a long match up until that point in Dream, so we kind of got to see his repertoire a wee bit, and some of the things he was pulling off. I mean,
he
got Match of the Year. Feud of the Year. But some of the things, it was kind of like, was it the DDT he does now? It was kind of the Sister Abigail position. The DDT looked like such a great move.
Kind of the Technodrome that PT Dunne does, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the exact same. Pretty much that is the move, actually, Scott. Very well done. That's why you're champ. it was a match, and a great match, and it helped put both men on the mat. Shows how good a match it was that we picked it over the actual War Games match, which was a match everybody was looking forward to on that particular card. So they did well to kind of stand out, especially it was quite early on in the card, second match in. Usually second match in's got a lot to live up to. Takeovers usually follows the tag match. Tag matches always steal the show. So actually, a fun fact of our top 8, this got the lowest rating by Mr. Meltzer.
He's a hack. Yes.
Well, it was fun. It was fun, so he has to hate it.
Well, he got 4 out of 5.
So he shit talked Coffee versus Pete Dunne And he said, oh, they used too many finishers. You ever seen a New Japan match? It is 90% finishers. Mm-hmm. Fuck Meltzer.
Oh, wow. I'm contributing to the tin this week. What could you expect?
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry.
If you like to put it in my tin, I'm more than happy to take any donations.
Cut that. He's bad.
I don't like stop begging James.
I put stock in his opinions when it comes to wrestling, but see, like the War Games match as well. I think he didn't give that too high a rating. Not from what I would have expected.
I can't really remember, but we'll move away from Mel, so we'll kind of talk about the other match that kind of got the joint score of 114 of our rankings. It's Shinsuke Nakamura versus Sami Zayn. Gary, I'll go to you in this one. Has there been a debut in NXT before and since it was as highly anticipated as Shinsuke Nakamura's going into this point?
Oh, I don't think so. I rewatched this match at the weekend. The reaction, that was a hot crowd. Mm-hmm. And when Nakamura was coming to the ring, the reaction of the crowd, the holy shit chants as he was coming to the ring. The man just walked a couple of, even 100 yards. Mm-hmm.
They're not going to fight forever as well, didn't they?
Yeah, and they got that before they even started, In a way, it kind of made me sad rewatching this match to think that if this match happened again in SmackDown, you wouldn't have the reaction, you wouldn't have the emotional, the audience would be pretty cold, whereas this audience loved everything they did. There was a moment in the match. I think everybody would have put their money on Shinsuke winning the match, but there was a moment when Sammy hit the Blue Thunderbomb that I thought, oh, he actually is going to win here.
He's never pinned anyone with that in his pocket.
One of the bits I love you mentioned about the audience reaction to it, the when they were exchanging punches towards the end of the match, when they sort of were a bit punch drunk and the audience just lapped up every minute of it. It was a great match, a great moment, amazing debut.
Yeah, it was something. Obviously about Shinsuke, but Sarah, you were kind of shaking your head as Gary was talking about who was going to win this. Sami Zayn, this was the 10th takeover to that point, the one at Dallas. Of all the matches we've actually picked on the 24, Sami Zayn was the joint MVP of them all. He was involved in five. So considering this was the 10th takeover and that he was involved in five matches, just shows how much of a star he was in NXT at this point.
Well, see, at that time, he was considered the heart and soul of NXT. Like, in this match, like, going back on what Gary said, like, the anticipation. Like, I went into this match I will admit, I wasn't big on New Japan at that particular time. Mm-hmm. Still not huge now, but I'm getting there. But just the actual reaction when he was announcing, like, I was watching the lead-up as well, and just the look on Sammy's face, saying, like you've been rewarded for all the hard work you put in, and just the look on his face, you're like, right, he's even impressed. This guy must be, like, a huge deal. Like, I was not familiar with Shinsuke, so I think this is I was sort of leaning towards Sammy. Of course, like, I backed Sammy from the first time I saw him. I was like the true underdog, and that's what I did love. But Sami Zayn at that time, like, he was like the sort of OG heart and soul of NXT at that particular time.
Yeah, it's spot on. And I mean, the thing about it as well, Scott, we spoke about this earlier on before the show. There's some takeover cards that are weak and they're kind of helped by certain matches. Was this an example of it? I mean, I look back on this takeover, and this is the one match that always stands out for me. I can't really remember much else that goes on in this actual takeover without rewatching it.
No, like, there were a lot of good matches going on, like a lot of anticipation. Like, American Alpha had a feel good moment at the start of the show. I think it just speaks to how good this match was that eclipsed all of that. Mm-hmm. And like I was like Sarah, I didn't know a lot about New Japan before Shinsuke came in, and we did kind of this match get one of the first ever like fight forever chance, and sadly that thing hasn't gone away.
Fight forever, and it's just like Kevin Owens versus a pizza. Like,
I remember Will Ospreay's one, like, Will Ospreay hates you, and that chance was, no, I don't want to fight forever, I'm tired, I want to go home now. But yeah, like, you wonder, the crowd's such a big part of this match. I wonder if you listened to it with the sound off, would it be similar to Rock Hogan? Like, obviously Sami Zayn and Nakamura are better workers than Rock Hogan, no disrespect to anybody, but the crowd are such an important part of it. Would you lose something if you watched it with the sound off? Like, everybody says Rock Hogan is not the same if you don't listen to it with the sound on, because the crowd plays such an important part in the match.
Well, we saw that in Raw this Monday, didn't we, with the call-ups for last week, with the call-ups of the NXT Big Four, Aleister Black, Ricochet, and then DIY. And any other city, any other time, those debuts would have been red hot. Mm-hmm. But that crowd in that night, for some reason, had all taken sleeping pills at the exact same time.
It's like they lived under a rock and had no idea who these guys were.
Yeah.
So obviously Pat McAfee released a video trashing
The one thing
you have to remember about NXT is, though, you look at the match and you do have to, in terms of wrestling, eliminate the crowd factor, because, and I rewatched this match, you take away the crowd, have to be harsh, it's not that good. It's okay. But Sami Zayn throws the weakest punches next only to Shane McMahon.
That is a bold statement.
If Brock Lesnar throws potatoes, Sami Zayn throws marshmallows. They're terrible.
I have to disagree. I thought these guys had like absolutely natural chemistry coming together for this one match, and it was the perfect person to have Nakamura's first match against, because you set Nakamura up as this dangerous striker, this king of strong style. Who else do you put him up against? The guy who can take any amount of punishment you give him and still stand up and take more, the heart and soul of NXT, as Sarah said. And it was great to set up a new finishing move. The fact that Corey Graves had that Kinshasa call was down from match one.
That was the start of Corey Graves' love for the Kinshasa.
It's one of the best finishing calls in wrestling history. It's like, so it's so good, and it set that up as a dangerous match ended finish. That what's the name of the inverted suplex he does before that? Is it just the inverted suplex?
The Cena killer.
Yeah, the Cena killer. He hit the Cena killer, and then the Kinshasa call. I was like, whoa, that's badass, man. I loved it.
You said like the match itself, like out of all these matches, this is the least story going into it, because like it's just simply Sammy's about to go up. Nakamura needs an opponent. But it doesn't take it away at all from the match. It's still a good match. I wasn't even in the arena, but I was watching this at my home in my house. I needed a cigarette after the match. You can only imagine being in the match or being in the arena.
But you got to think about it. With NXT, they've kind of done this thing of we debut big names in the crowd. But this was the one of the few times you can remember they got a big match. Him, Black, got big matches, but I think it kind of helped. He's such a star in Japan, Nakamura.
Because that's not the first time they did that thing in the crowd, because they did Roode, that takeover appeared in the crowd. Was that not the first time they did that?
I can't remember exactly. It's not something, again, like I said earlier on, this is the one thing about this takeover I remember very, very vividly.
Only thing I remember.
Yes, some takeovers sort of blend together at certain points in time. You're like,
you remember this? American Alpha and the crowd turning on the main event.
And the crowd goes mild.
You think after... you mentioned the NXT call-ups. The debut of those four incredible athletes on Raw was really underwhelming. Triple H in the ring saying these guys are going to be here tonight, and then you got this, you know, silly behind-the-scenes skits of people making fun of them. Yeah. You think if anything, WWE over the years would have learned how to make impactful debuts.
Yeah.
Nakamura this night made an impactful debut.
They did it with Kevin Owens as well. He turned up and annihilated Cena.
His one was all right because it obviously got to take out Cena and kind of put himself over. Then he got the big match from him. You kind of hope that the NXT 4, as it'll probably now be called, will have the opposite effect compared to what Nakamura's had. Big first match debut, and now he's technically Rusev.
They form a terrible stable.
He's jobbing out to.
To be fair, he sold that kick something awful. If you've not seen that sale, you got to see it. But that's the matches that we picked as 8 and 7. Now we're going to go to the match that was picked 6. Now our 8, 7, 6, 5 and 4 were all very close. 3 points in it in total. I'm going to go now to David Campbell for match number 6, because he voted this as his number 1.
This was my favourite match.
Yeah, it was Bayley and Sasha at NXT TakeOver Respect, which got 115 from us as a total. Yeah. David, why was this your favourite match?
Well, there's reasons that I actually placed this ahead of the Brooklyn match. We'll come to the tiny problems I have with the Brooklyn match later on. The one thing I love about this match, 30 Women Iron Women match, is the pacing of this match is absolutely superb. This match went by so quickly for me, I forgot that it was a half an hour long affair. And The other thing that I want to bring up immediately off the bat, Sasha Banks' heel work in this match is the best heel work I've seen in wrestling in the last 10 years. The way that she screams at that little girl in the family in the front row.
Steals her headband off her
and
as well.
And that's the thing, like, part of this is really personal for me because at this time I was watching it with my youngest sister who sort of grew up wrestling at this point. But she was watching NXT with me in this match and she was so invested, like screaming at the television screen when Sasha went in Izzy's face and stuff. And it was just like, people talk about the women's evolution and it bringing a young female audience into the product, and sometimes we sort of dismiss that, but this match showed to me that yes, this sort of representation for the female women's roster is important. And for me, this was the turning point for it because it's the match that I watched and I took it so seriously, and I was like, this is by far the best wrestling match I've seen in the last 10 years purely because of the storytelling, the pacing and the emotion of that Full Sail crowd, because this is the only match that we are talking about that took place in front of the Full Sail audience, and I thought that was very, very fitting for this affair between two of the stars of NXT.
Yeah, Gary, it's a good point to go to you obviously as a father to one of the biggest Bayley fans in the world. Is this a match, one of the first matches that you and Lucy kind of watched?
Yeah. It was nice rewatching this match because it was back to a time when all was right in the world. Bayley was reigning champion. It was amazing. And actually, when you were talking about Izzy, you could take Izzy out and put Lucy there. And if Sasha Banks had pulled Lucy's headband off her, she'd have been heartbroken and crying and wanting to fight her. So, and it's absolutely, that match is an absolute turning point for the women's evolution. It was a main event. I think it was probably one of the first main event.
Yeah.
The pacing of the match, they didn't touch each other for the first 2 minutes of the match either. They just sort of walked around. It was a wee bit odd having, so I was a bit later to NXT, so I've seen some NXTs in the bigger arena takeovers. So it was a bit weird almost looking back at this one in the small arena set up, but that you would not have known there were only a couple of hundred people there. You could easily have believed there were thousands of people watching it. And Sasha's heel work, she touched on that when she had Bayley, who was selling the hand injury and the Banks escape, and she was trying to reach for the rope, and then she starts kicking her hand.
Yeah, I love that, it was so vicious.
Storytelling at its finest. And then James, this whole card is built around this match, I think personally. You had the Dusty Rhodes Classic starting off at that point, but everything was just geared towards these two going at it for half an hour.
It's nice to see a match in which the heel is a heel throughout. There's no crowd showboating from Sasha, there's no clever moves. Everything is built around the idea that you should hate her, which is good because, you know, when I watch a match and Orton's the heel, like, I'm just using Orton as an example, not specifically because I don't like him, but he hits that RKO and he gets up and he flails his body in the crowd, he wiggles his pecs a bit, and I'm just like, don't show off, you're the heel, hit the RKO, then kick him in the nuts a few times, like, that's your job. And that's what Sasha did. She taunted the little kid, she booted Bailey's arm, she made fun of her, she pulled her hair. I loved it.
Yeah.
Sarah, is this a side of Sasha Banks that we kind of miss on the main roster when we got back? This is probably peak Sasha, I think.
Oh, hell yeah. I miss this Sasha Banks, if I'm honest. Like, she was the most cocky heel that I had seen in such a long time. But she made it work. Like, see, going into, like, even just both their matches, like, this was essentially the rematch from Brooklyn. So Sasha had been away. She'd been pulling double duty on Raw and SmackDown as part of Team Bad. And
I said about that the bell.
Yeah.
That was bad.
It was still absolutely phenomenal. I mean, like, there was eye raking, there was pulling people's hair, there was a game with Izzy. I've not seen that Sasha Banks since then, and I miss her a little bit because that was the best Sasha Banks. If she were to turn heel again and do that again, I think it would absolutely revamp her career.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that David brought up, Scott, which I've completely forgot about, was this was in front of the Full Sail crowd.
They
went to Brooklyn for that one time. They've not been back to Full Sail since for a takeover, you know, so it's just interesting to have that sort of reaction. But it just shows how much storytelling went on between these two over about a year and a half. They've kind of been very prominent
there and thereabouts. But I totally agree with a lot of people saying that this was Sasha at her best. This is when wrestling's at best, when there's a clear heel that everyone hates, and I threw a face at everyone, and we'll get into some other examples as we go on. And I'm really with David in that this edges out the Brooklyn match for me for a few reasons, in that Sasha does anything she can to get the upper hand. She takes a count out for one of the falls, anything to scare to get that advantage. And also like the classic heel work, the which shades of like Jericho in 08, how much she just doesn't care, she's gonna make a child cry, doesn't just so that you boo her. Like Jericho thought about if he was a certain distance from Arena, he wouldn't talk to fans, no matter if they were kids or adults, he wouldn't talk to them.
About it is he's turned heel on Bailey by supporting the man.
Kids today.
But the man is the peak though. We can't go higher than
that. I hate to bring up a pop culture reference so soon into the show, but this is the Rocky 2 of wrestling matches. This is Bailey going in to prove that her performance in the first match was not a fluke, and I love that aspect to babyface storytelling, specifically when it's a babyface like Bailey who thrives off of being the sort of innocent underdog. See, when they bring that fire and they bring that heat, and it's just watching two warriors fight rather than some innocent girl, which Bailey has sometimes been portrayed to be as in the main roster. This is the version of Bailey that I like. This is peak Bailey, never mind peak Sasha as well.
It's definitely peak Bailey.
Mm-hmm. I say that I prefer this to the Brooklyn match, doesn't obviously take away from the Brooklyn match how good that was, but this kind of builds on a few aspects. I guess thanks to the Brooklyn match, you immediately buy this as a main event because you believe the story and you know that they can pull it off. And also Bailey at the end showing that vicious streak, which is basically stomping the back of Sasha's head towards the end to get the final fall when they're all tied up and the clogs are running down, which is kind of a callback to Sasha stamping on the hand of Bailey, kind of getting her payback on Sasha.
Yeah, the finish was really good. Mm-hmm. The Sasha tapping out.
It was much better her tapping out at this point than when she tapped out in the similar match against Charlotte on the main roster a year and a half later. It's like you're the face and you have tapped out in the last few seconds.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nobody really cares about this feud anymore.
There was a period of time where Charlotte was basically like Cena though, so
she still kind of is.
Still kind of is.
Let's not lie, they're kind of booking that way. But another thing I quite liked about, and if you look at the whole thing about this card, is this was, we kind of had Sasha moving on officially, and then on the card we had the debut of Asuka. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like that changing of the guard type. Well, even though we didn't get Asuka versus Bailey until, oh wait, that was that show that I forgot about. That was on the Dallas card.
Yeah. Well, that was the problem with Bailey as an underdog champion. The longer she holds the belt, the less effective she is. And I think that's what's good about her pairing with Sasha Banks, who's built on this sort of confidence and sort of that machismo kind of like pride. I like how pairing her up, a longer title reign will work with the women's tag team titles, but Bailey as a singles champion has a very quick expiry date.
Oh, you're so right, David. I was at WrestleMania 33 with Lucy, and Bailey was going in there as the defending champion. I was bricking it that whole match. That this was not going to have the outcome that my 7-year-old daughter.
It was very early in the card as well. Yeah. For WrestleMania especially.
That I was worried that whole match.
It's like I want to see the full show.
If she had gone in as not the champion, I would have had much more confidence she would have come out with the belt,
especially in an elimination fatal four-way.
Yeah, I didn't remember it was. I forgot it was elimination four-way when it came to the ring. Is that what?
No. Do you know, like, panic every match that Bailey has these days?
Yeah, pretty much. This is not enjoyable.
Elimination chamber enter at number one must have been a horrible affair. Horrible.
Yep.
Any match you had prior to Christmas, he was just like,
no heel turns, please.
But a very deserving match on a top eight, especially. It was probably the only match we could have picked on this particular card.
First time ever, historic event.
Ah, there we go. What was that?
Something I noticed, actually, they weren't using, like, first time ever in historic.
Oh, no, they did.
Because they didn't.
They
not
did.
Not as much.
They only
as,
do
like,
that if it's the main roster, like, the first ever Women's Iron Man.
Because I remember.
Actually, Bailey and Sasha had one.
I just remember them just going, it was the first time ever historic, like, literally in that order, and I went, ah, pop.
They said first ever last women standing as well, and I was like, Asuka and Nikki.
Yeah.
That totally happened, though.
Kevin Owens' first ever match. He's been in NXT for 4 months now.
It's just weird how they don't acknowledge NXT.
Until they
come up.
I think that's a Vince thing.
Vince doesn't watch NXT apparently, but he should because there's lots of great matches, like the one I'm going to talk about next, which got a score of 116. It was a very emotional match that happened in Toronto. It was the Revival versus DIY. Who else in the panel should I go to other than, of course, the Revival's biggest fan and someone who gets very emotional in DIY matches.
Oh, no. Like,
Sarah.
Oh no.
2 out of 3 falls. Revival DIY.
This is like my favourite match heading into this. Like, I know I didn't vote it as like my favourite.
Well, you're at number 2.
Exactly. So it's close to being a favourite, but the one I voted number 1, I couldn't not vote that as number 1. So let's just. But I was like, I was saying before the show that yes, like I am like a huge Revival fan, absolutely huge DIY fan at the time, and I'm still not over that heartbreak. But like this.
Back together though.
Not in the same way, James.
It'll never be the same.
It's not the same. No, I still got trust issues from that.
Oh, all right.
Like, heading into this match, it was sort of win-win for me because either one of my favourite two teams was going to walk out champions, but at the same time, one of my favourite two teams is not going to walk out the champions. So this was so, so upsetting for me and so, so happy in a way, but 2 out of 3 falls, I've always thought is like, it should be the stipulation to end a feud. It's like best out of three. Like everyone does that. Rock, paper, scissors, it's always best out of three. Everything is always best out of three. So in this match, Ultimate Masterclass, like this was my happy place. It's like tag team wrestling actually became important again because like I actually still say that because of these two teams in NXT, tag team wrestling started to matter again. Mm. And you couldn't go wrong. I mean, like the first fall is like Shatter Machine. It's like one of the greatest finishers ever.
Oh, it's a fantastic
I love that finisher to pieces.
It's a fantastic finisher.
Cool name too.
I know. Shatter Machine.
Shatter Machine.
The finishes that these teams use, I love the Gargano Ciampa super kick.
The end of Heartache, was that not called?
The Meet in the Middle. It's the end of Heartache's Roderick Strong's.
Oh, that's yeah. Roderick Strong's backbreaker.
It's also, the worst name for a finisher ever.
It's in the middle. It's like Sevenfold Song or some other band he likes.
So you know, Roderick Strong is doing anything.
Killswitch Engage, is it?
I would have had Roderick Strong as a script man.
Before we talk about Roderick Strong, Gary, you went.
the finish and the you may have been coming onto this in a moment, but the finish of the match with the double tap out
that,
well, that's a proper
that
way
was
to finish
that
it,
was
it,
picture perfect, wasn't it? It's like you just see them like it's like two best pals going, no, don't you dare tap, and we're in this together, and they're like, ah, fucking tap, and you're like, it was just the emotion in that match.
David Campbell, the director of the call.
It was so good that Triple H and Stephanie stole it in their Ronda Rousey Kurt Angle match at one point during that.
And they didn't even do it right.
Yeah, if you're going to pay tribute to something, you do it right. God damn it. All I have to say about this match is, see, yeah, this is the match that I thought the Revival, like, who are these Revival fellas? This guy is bald with a mustache. I don't care about
that. They were known as the mechanics to start with as well. You're like, wait, what?
This is the match that made me think that Scott Dawson is an absolute superstar. I love both of them together, but Scott, there's something about Scott Dawson that I've always
the mustache.
Just, yeah, he's, I've the always mustache. Just grabbed it. It looks so grumpy all the time.
I just love it. It's like the downward mustache with the mutton chops. You're like,
yeah,
he just looks sad.
He is the one wrestler on that roster I'd love to just grab a beer with and just listen to talk because I just think he can play 100% of the time.
Fists.
Yeah. And there's things, you talk about tag team wrestling starting to matter, the psychology of the Revival in this match was second to none. Like, see this, the tricks they were doing, and some of like, so something as simple as getting your opponent in the corner and laying into them, they seemed to do that in inventive ways in this match. I just remember like it was Dash Wilder like leaning over Gargano at this point, like in the corner. I was just like, this is just so cool and it's so simple.
Greatest heel tag team in NXT.
One of the things you said, David, earlier on, you talked about the Bayley Sasha match, was it wouldn't have been great. It's good without. Was it you who said that? I can't remember.
Scott said,
I'm getting used to mixed up with your matching schlur. Scott, you said that the match before wouldn't have been as good without this one. This is another example as well between these two. Other match was on our top 24, didn't make the top 8, but that was a brilliant match as well.
Yeah, it's a sequel building on the original, as it were. And like, I remember I loved the Revival feud with American Alpha. Mm-hmm. You had that feel good moment in a weekend and all that. And for a while I thought when American Alpha went up, like, nothing's going to be able to top this feud tag team-wise. Mm-hmm. And this match proved me wrong. Like, cause I obviously wasn't as big a fan of the Brit Club match, but this really pulled me back. And how this isn't 5 stars, I don't know. I mean, at the time...
4.5 officially it got.
It I remember should have been
when Meltzer was saying, I don't know if I can quite give it 5 stars, and Scott Dawson, I believe, was brilliant and said, what if we changed our finisher to the Meltzer machine? Would you give us a
He's like, well, what more could they have done to get 5 stars in that match?
Like you said, nothing. He's a fraud.
James Charlton. James Murphy versus Dave Meltzer Cummingson.
Seven stars.
But to kind of what Sarah said about 2 or 3 falls match, like, that's a very underrated stipulation in my opinion, because for a while in NXT it seemed to be the ultimate blow off as a 2 or 3 mm-hmm, falls match.
Yes.
While especially in the early days you had Sammy v Cesaro, you had American Alpha and Revival in one, and they had this one here. It seemed like you want to end a feud, we don't need weapons, we just need good wrestling.
No, it's amazing looking back on it how Tommaso Ciampa has morphed himself into such a mega heel when there was such big baby faces. Yes. At this point, it's just like that's how good he is at being a bad guy.
The kayfabe was that he was always a bastard.
They kind of psycho killer.
Johnny Gargano, bastard's not a swear word, really.
What? And the ten. This is
you can say it on the BBC.
This is filling the fun anyway, for Roscoe Nichols.
Anyway, I would say the main thing about that was with this match. See the Revival. I'm still not their biggest fans, but this is a very good match. That tells you a lot, because whenever I see the Revival, I go, I snore, right? But this is a really good match.
Say yeah.
Great match.
What happened on Raw with the little reaction they got? And then watching this, it just makes it even what happened on Raw even more heartbreaking.
Yeah, the match they had last week on Raw.
I can't watch that match on Raw because it's not the same.
Yeah. So bad on Raw.
Just worth saying, taking a minute to say, how good are some of the tag teams that have come through NXT? So you mentioned American Alpha.
Matters.
I loved American Alpha.
Love Mojo Rawley and Zack Ryder.
Let's not get carried away, James.
The thing about not even the tag teams, but all the matches we've discussed so far, the benefit from the meat and potatoes storytelling that Triple H gives them. Like, yes, you can have a flashy moveset and good gimmicks, but the builds, the way these matches are structured and the build to them, they're very simple. They're just personal rivalries. They're personal structure. Like, the heels go 1-0 up and the baby faces then get the next 2 falls. That's like basic storytelling, but it's the way that they allows those wrestlers to go out there and execute it and execute their own vision. Mm-hmm. That's what makes NXT special.
Like, see, the other thing that I really liked is that this also stemmed from the Dusty Rhodes Classic, and it's like they were meant to meet in the Classic, and then obviously like Dawson's just like, oh, I've got a sore leg, I'm on a crutch, and then but they're appearing under the ring, and
very fitting it actually followed the Dusty Classic final with between AOP and
the
It's really unusual to see WWE do two tag matches back to back as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much in the middle of the card as well. Mm-hmm. There was a We had Mickey James was on after him in Toronto.
Yeah, who of TM61 was released? Shane Miller,
randomly. Right. Shane Thorne's just popping up everywhere now.
Shane Thorne's now part of NXT UK, I'm pretty sure.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he's popping up.
I was just curious.
And we get to a point that who's not a part of NXT UK? People from UK.
My God, it's the Undertaker!
Not anymore.
Yeah, he's doing the UK soon. Never know. But no, it's You kind of miss seeing. You kind of see what's happened with the Revival since that. It seems to be a common theme with this NXT team. What's happened since, you know?
That's why I'm a big advocate of don't go. It's a trap. It's a trap because you see what happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Finally, the top guys are back on top. But it's not the point.
Well, they had guys and the top girls now.
I know, right?
They had a great
day. I actually love them, actually. Sort of like, they're both actually clinking the belts. Love it.
They weren't helped by injuries, I think. That kind of helped their momentum.
I mean, one got injured and then
the other one got injured,
which is just so unusual.
They came back at the wrong time because the plan was the Bar had beaten all the teams and they realised, still got the Revival, but we don't want to lose to the Revival. We had to beat the Revival now. And then we left with nowhere to go.
Love the Bar. Keep them on top.
Yeah, but this is a classic match. It's the only tag team match on our top 8. Surprisingly, considering the quality of tag team wrestling we've got.
Is it actually?
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Only tag team match. we'll now go on to our match, which was number 4. We got a total of 1-1-7. These matches were really, really close in terms of the rankings. One we talked about a matter of minutes ago. It is Bayley versus Sasha in Brooklyn. Scott, we've kind of mentioned crowds. How hot was the crowd in Brooklyn? The first takeover to be held outside of Full Sail.
Yeah, this is like, NXT was already by this point amongst the most hardcore fans, and plus this is a big 4 weekend, so they were going to be hot no matter what, but it helped that they actually got a good show. And I think I talked to you about this, like, these two matches with Bayley and Sasha and the Becky Sasha one from Unstoppable the month or so before, they were both helped by the fact that when you watch them, you're so impressed by the quality of them. And it's also helped by the fact that you're watching in the main roster and you're really not getting much in terms of women's wrestling. Essentially, just, by the way, these people are pals, but they don't like these ones, so everyone's going to fight at once. Maybe you don't know who's who anymore.
Yeah. do you believe in miracles? Mm-hmm. This was the night a miracle happened and Bayley became the champion. It felt like this really special match.
So yeah,
I thought you were going to say you sexy thing after that thing.
David, as a director, you need to appreciate the video package that they did for this match between these two. It was peak WWE.
It was perfect, and I love the fading image of the four horsewomen, and it's just Bayley being taken out of that.
The music
picture.
Just slowing down.
Yeah.
Because
they set our motivations up perfectly. It's like, I am the one who's been overlooked here. I am the underdog. I'm just about as much a part of this revolution as you guys, and I'm the one getting left behind. No! No!
How have WWE not won an Emmy for their video editing yet?
Because
it boggles the mind.
It's looked down upon in terms of TV when in actuality it's the best soap opera that's been on TV for the past 25-30 years.
This was at a time when I wasn't even into NXT. I really just got back into wrestling. And this was still compelling to someone who was just sort of learning who was who. Mm-hmm. And if that's someone with a passing knowledge of wrestling, surely any wrestling fan would have loved it.
Yeah.
And yet, I think when I rewatch this, because of how much I've seen of Bayley and Sasha, I just think, I understand why you're such a big deal. Why you're praised so much. Because that match and the match before it were prime examples of what women were into achieve in terms of wrestling.
You can criticize WWE for a lot of things, but you rarely hear anybody criticising their edit and their video packages, because they can do them better than just about anybody.
Oh, that's absolutely phenomenal. But one thing we've kind of outlined, Sarah, these five matches so far is we talk a lot about the card. If you look at the matches that came before this, we had Jushin Thunder Liger debuting in WWE.
Mm-hmm.
We had the Tag Team Championship match, which if you look back at it now, Vaudevillains versus Blake and Murphy, mm-hmm. doesn't seem great at the time. The crowd were so into the Vaudevillains.
Yeah.
It just shows how good this match was to stand out on this card. Yeah, Balor and Joe as well.
Oh, I know.
The ladder match.
Like,
no, it's Balor and Owens.
Balor and Owens, sorry, the ladder match. He fought Joe that many times. It's
I know, Joe came after that. Joe came after the Dusty Classic.
Yeah, so he did.
What really actually drew me into this match is that this, in my eyes, like, I know everyone, like, I do even talk about Paige and Emma kicking off the Women's Revolution. This is what brought it to light, in my opinion. Like, I was a firm believer of the actual revolution going on at the main roster at that particular time, but it was actually this one showed what a true revolution can actually be, because mm-hmm. like it didn't even take much, but 15,000 people were brought to their feet by this match. You could tell from the get-go that it was a plain simple match as well. It was classic. You've got the good guy versus the bad guy. Again, you could easily see Sasha being the cocky heel coming in that big Escalade, and Quacky looks like you're going to fall asleep in my... like a bedtime story. Like, yeah. It's like the hero and the villain. No, the hero and the villain. It's just like, you know, the princess and the bad guy. So...
I was actually listening intently because I was going back to that match.
I just felt like my storytelling was that good. The Quacky was just like, oh, bedtime story.
Yeah, once upon a time.
There was a princess called Bayley and a bad guy called Sasha. And at the end of the day, Bayley slayed the dragon after being the ultimate underdog and, you know, took the title.
And
the
I think
hold.
That Sarah and Scott have put it beautifully when it came to, you're comparing the revolution that was going on in the main roster at that time to what was happening in NXT, and we're finally getting it now. What we didn't want with the women's revolution was throw as many women into a match as possible. We want to see good storytelling and good time being dedicated mm-hmm. to the women's division. That is what Bayley and Sasha showed us. What the future could be like, and we're finally getting it now. We're seeing the seeds that were planted here in Brooklyn finally come into fruition, leading into this year's WrestleMania.
Yeah, it was a really good story going into this. Is Bayley good enough to win it? Can Bayley win the big match? Can she do the things she needs to do to win the match? And you've seen Bayley start the match with some aggression that you don't usually see from her. But some of the spots in that match, there were some really great spots in it. There was Bayley's, I loved her springboard elbow and Sasha in the corner, which you don't see her do anymore, which looked devastating. Sasha doing the somersault over the, as the ref was at the ropes, over the ref onto the floor. Great. And the pop when Bayley hit the Bayley to Bayley, when Sasha was holding the ropes and she sort of pulled her up, caught her, hit the Bayley to Bayley, the whole place went mental.
It was the reverse hurricane Rana as well.
For me, like, the whole match, the best thing about it was, I think for for a long time, it's the best use of ring rope work I've seen. Because like a lot of the spots involved the ropes, and it was just amazing. Seeing high flying technical submission, whatever, all using the ropes is brilliant.
Well, see, it also goes back to talking about earlier about Sami Zayn being like the heart and soul. Bayley was the female Sami Zayn at this particular time. Like, she was the ultimate underdogs, that like, she could never get the big time. And that's what it's like, it worked for the guy. It's like, well, work it for a female. And it worked even better, in my opinion, than what it did for Sami. I mean, she was like considered the heart and soul. And like everyone else had went away to the main roster. She was left and she had that division built all the way around her. And it worked.
Has there been a purer babyface than Bayley, really?
Johnny Gargano.
He literally turned heel.
Yeah,
for a while.
I mean, I don't think Bayley could never turn heel.
Was
thing.
Doing questionable things.
I think at the start of the DIY feud, he was probably the purest babyface since Bayley.
Oh yeah.
Even when Bayley got super mad, I think the most she did was hit someone with a kendo stick. Johnny Gargano was handcuffing Ciampa and buying seven sheets out of him, you know.
He went to that dark place.
Like, yeah.
But Bayley just roughened up. Bayley,
even John Cena in his white bread milk toast cornflakes, you know. Bayley's the purest baby face.
I don't think I think it's, I think it'd be impossible to ever turn Bayley heel. I don't.
I hope you're right, Sarah.
You don't ever see it working. Like, you know Bayley, she's been like the purest baby face since she debuted.
There's gonna be an article on Sports Skeeda tomorrow that says
Bayley went dark.
Tweet, 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 predict Bayley to turn heel tomorrow.
I would love that just for the cover.
We've talked a lot about how the main roster was doing things in the NXT at this time. Like, when you look at the main roster, women were lucky to be allowed to go to the top. Oh, like in this match, women are pulling it, but they reverse ran to the top rope.
Well, the night after that, they had a 9-woman triple threat tag match, which, let's be honest, was Becky could have won in that match, actually.
I know,
Becky
right?
Been in that one, which was great.
I know, right?
I'm not a fan of the reverse ran, that's quite a dangerous move. And she went way too often in NXT.
You talk about, like, you asked about like, the whole Full Sail thing compared to Brooklyn, like, with these two, I think you can put it in any kind of arena, and people will buy in because these matches were that good, and the crowd, as long as it's the NXT fans, you'll jam as many into a small arena or a big arena, they'll still buy into it.
Is it surprising this is the only Brooklyn match that was in the top 8? Considering how many times.
I mean, I don't think any other match really stood out after this one. This one kind of stole the show.
The other Brooklyn matches we had in our top 24 was Asuka versus Ember Moon, Revival DIY 1, and Undisputed Era versus Mustache Mountain.
I'm a huge fan of the Asuka Ember Moon feud out of the ones you listed there. I think that feud is very, very much underrated, and Ember Shayna for that matter as well. I will only make it say it feels harsh to criticise any of these matches, but the one thing that I'd pick out about this match is at the beginning of it, there seems to be some nerves and some pacing issues between the two. I think that might be because it's the first time these two are performing on a stage this big, that the first time under those huge lights, they're kind of rushing into things a wee bit and they're not giving things as much time as they should possibly. However, they do settle into the match fairly quickly. It was just something I noticed off the bat, was like, whoa, they're kind of rushing these sequences a wee bit, a few wee botches here and there, but they settled in quite quickly.
There haven't been good matches since Bayley Sasha, but I really enjoy one of my favourite women's matches other than the Bayley Sasha is Asuka Ember at Brooklyn 3, and I think that was one of the better matches, best women's title matches since that feud, which I think speaks to how good of a standard they set, that few matches after it could really get close to it.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously the pinnacle of women's wrestling as we've kind of got in our rank. It's the final women's match is going to be on our top 8, but
we're sexist.
And we apparently hate tag wrestling because
hate women, hate tag wrestling.
When you see the top 3, which
I don't hate women's wrestling or tag wrestling, so
why didn't you vote them higher then?
I voted the tag wrestling as number 2.
Watch
yourself.
Anyway, so you'll understand when we talk in the second half about our top 3, the quality of the matches. The top 3 were far ahead in our ranking, but that's going to be in the second half. But we're going to take a short break first, where we're going to hear some of the best entrances in the history of NXT TakeOver. And then we're going to talk about our top 3. We'll see you in a bit.
See ya.
Hi, I'm Jenny Keitel, and you're listening to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, and Tweet.
it's your boy Shug D out here swag surfing in Scotland. And when I'm doing my thing, I like to think I do it in this order. It's eat, sleep, suplex, retweet. Let me run that back for you. It's eat, sleep, suplex, retweet. Remember the order. Listen to the show. Now you know. It's Shug D for the 99-2000.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet.
Welcome back to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet. I'm Stephen Wilson. I am joined by my lovely panel today, and we are talking about the history of NXT TakeOver. Before we go back onto the subject, thank you again to Debbie Keitel for being the voice of this week's show. You can catch Sarah's lovely interview with her on our back catalogue, iTunes, all good Android podcasting sites, and Spotify. Right, so before we go back onto the final three matches, I just want to outline some of the ones briefly that were touched upon that we didn't quite get in our top eight. We had the likes of Gargano, Ricochet at the recent Phoenix show, the Triple Threat tag team match at Orlando, Revival DIY, and Offers of Pain. We had Sasha Banks versus Becky Lynch at Unstoppable.
Yes.
Was this your number one, Stephen? Be honest.
It was my number five. Right. Which was also
number five.
It was also Sarah one? And David's number five.
It's a class match.
Can I just be an honourable mention?
I used to put it very high. Yes. I hadn't seen it when it came out. I had to watch it before.
It was
for the
certainly
show.
A match.
It was a match.
I had the same attachment to that match.
We had some great matches from the early days of TakeOver as well. Sami Zayn and Neville. At Evolution.
Ooh.
Kevin Owens heel turn was amazing. Some of the matches from the Brooklyn ones we touched upon earlier on. We had War Games 2.
Electric Boogaloo.
We also had the very first match from the TakeOver, the specials. It wasn't a TakeOver at that point in time. Sami Zayn, Cesaro.
Oh, I love that match.
An absolute phenomenal match. One match that a lot of the listeners, when we asked them their opinion, a lot of the listeners picked out a lot of our top 24, by the way. The one that came up quite frequently was the six-man ladder match at New Orleans, which wasn't in the top 8, which makes you realise what might be in the top 8 of the top 24, but we may talk about that in a bit.
Spoilers.
Let's go on to our top 3, which were, I'm not going to lie, the top 3 were kind of runaways in terms of points. When we talk again, this is out of 168. This particular match got 135 on our rankings. It was the first ever NXT TakeOver match to get a 5-star rating.
First ever?
Yes.
Historic.
It was the match between Johnny Gargano and Andrade Cien Almas. How was that, Quacko?
Yeah, that was good.
Quacko, I think I might actually go to you in this one as the biggest Andrade fan that I know. What did you make of this match between these two?
What a match. Like, for me, like, I'm not scared to admit, like, when NXT started, I was still on my kind of hiatus. I was still kind of crawling into wrestling. And that's when I first went to my first ICW show. And then that's when I kind of got interested in WWE. And the first TakeOver match I watched live was Gargano Almas. I'm going to give him his full name because he's got his name cut on SmackDown. It's annoying me.
Yeah, really.
He's now just Andrade.
I know. His feud music sales say CN Almas, but that's another thing. But that match was what got me hooked on NXT TakeOver, because it was during when I had the month subscription, the 3-month subscription on WWE Network. I just thought, okay, I'll give this a bash. And it was that match that made me not cancel my direct debit, and I've stuck by since, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Scott, on any other show, the match that came before this, Aleister Black versus Adam Cole, would have got...
I did it before Dave.
He's not here.
Don't care.
Not you, Dave. Not
Dave. Good one, see ya.
Scott, that would have been match of the night any other time, but it just shows the caliber of this match. And this was, we talked earlier on in the show about Sami Zayn being the MVP of the early days.
Yeah.
Johnny Gargano's firmly solidified himself as the current MVP, and this was the one in the match on his own that showed just what he was capable of.
Yeah, definitely. All three of these matches could be 5 stars easily, or they could be like number one for us. But like you said, Johnny Gargano was like one of the purest faces the NXT had at the time, or all WWE had at this time, and like we knew how good this match could have been, could be because we had the match at Brooklyn, and then they'd had another match on NXT, and they kind of like you had Andrade and Selena dismissing Johnny at the start, like, "What, you again? Have we not beaten you already?" Obviously, the Norfolk Glasgow didn't say it like that.
Could you imagine though?
Right.
Well, they just beat Drew. Let me take over before that. They may have inherited something off him. That and his belt. I take your accent,
I was going to say that's how it works. You absorb their accent as well as their championship. I now speak like an arsehole because Dick Stevens belt.
James, I before this match underestimated Almas as a top level competitor. We talk a lot about Johnny, but does he not get enough credit compared to Johnny in this one? Or do you think?
I would say he was a better competitor in this match. Andrade St. Almas, he's one of these wrestlers who doesn't really have a comparable counterpart, except maybe Rey Mysterio, which, by the way, some of their matches on SmackDown have been phenomenal.
You can watch that all year.
Rey Mysterio looks like he's 20. It's incredible. But the problem is, I think, I would say the crowd loved it, but if maybe they knew a bit more about who Andrade was, this would have been one of those fight forever, screaming Zayn and Nakamura type responses. I was sad to see Almas lose that title. I think he could have held on to it for a wee bit longer.
I think it made sense with him going up to the main roster. I mean,
yeah, they underutilised them, but they're using them well now.
Yeah, absolutely. He's now getting very well used. But David, we've talked a lot in this show about finishes to match. We talked about it in the match just before the break with Bayley and Sasha. Mm-hmm. The finishing sequence to this one, the double knees on the apron to the ring post. Oh my God, Johnny looked like he was dead.
I actually think, and this is high praise, it's my favourite finish of any of the matches we're discussing on today's list.
Yeah,
And that comes down to a lot. Good commentary makes good matches. Mauro Ranallo's constant reminder that Johnny might be basically dying if he takes another hit to the neck or head kind of made you think, yeah, you're right, Mauro. And then all of a sudden, double knees to the bloody pole. And you're like, oh my goodness.
I actually forgot that. And then as soon as you mentioned it, I just saw the flash in my head of remembering that happening and shouting at home, just going, ooh!
Yeah. And people forget how effective a DDT finisher could be, and I think Andrade's one of the few people who uses it extremely well.
Yeah.
Better than Alexa Bliss's.
Yeah, and I also like to bring up, when I made my debut in this show more than a year ago now, one of the first things that I said was, Zelina Vega makes Andrade Cien Almas the competitor and character that he is. And she paid dividends in this match. She helped to increase the drama. We had that part of what was effective about the finish was Zelina wasn't even at ringside because Candace came out
and
chased her Hornswoggle style off into the sunset.
But one thing I like about it, adds a wee bit extra, we've got a fantastic match, but Sarah, it's all about stories.
Oh yeah.
And what helped made this was what happened after the match where we saw the return of the psycho killer, Tommaso Ciampa.
Oh yeah. I mean, what else could you have done at the end of that match? I mean, did that involve the watermark?
No. It was just the water. I don't even had a watermark. I think it was the crutch. It was the
debut
of the crutch.
No, I think it was the watermark. I think the watermark came up just before the crutch came out.
Well, there we go. It's a perfect time to talk to Sarah.
It's like my crying is different. I'm never going to live that down, but then I milk it like, as much as I possibly can. But no, like the debut of the crutch, I mean, it was like the end of one feud, and it's just like, right, kickstart the next one. It's like we've been waiting for this to kick off ever since the ladder match, and we're like, we had to wait like a whole 9 months to a year to get this, and it was the debut of the crutch. Debut of the crotch.
It sounds like you're saying crotches.
I mean, I am the creepy one. I am.
Breakout star of the year, according to Tommaso Ciampa, that crotch.
Crunchy.
What you don't see at the other camera angle is
I'm not gonna lie. It's nice to see the crutch.
You make
get
it sound like I go halfway across the world to take pictures of people's crotches.
It's
crutches.
To be fair, it's nice to see that the crutch got a call up to the main roster recently with Becky Lynch. You know?
Yeah, and you know, the crutch has been, you know, having a rough time of it, sitting at home, not being able to make the money. So glad it's in employment again.
No. Well deserving of the first WWE 5-star match since CM Punk and John Cena.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And it took that long.
But that's the thing, you talk about length, like, WWE don't give their competitors enough time, the majority of the times, for lack of a better term. They cut matches off at around the 20 minute mark typically, even for main events sometimes. This match goes on like 35 to 40 minutes, I believe.
Oh, it's a solid, solid match.
Yeah, and that's what, giving the competitors enough room to breathe and grow and to build suspense and have a finish that doesn't feel out of place or out of time. That's when you're going to get these five-star classics, and a lot of the time, especially in the main roster, they just don't give the wrestlers enough time to do that.
No.
And it's the fact that NXT, when you really think about it, has been around for so long at this point and been putting it so many great matches, one taker after the other, that you really realise, wait, this is the only one that's got five stars. It really just puts away how good this match is and how apparently flawed Mr. Meltzer's system is.
No. Well, I think how flawed his system potentially is outlined in our number two match. It's a match that happened at NXT TakeOver Chicago. It's one that, from a British and Scottish perspective, obviously makes us absolutely proud at how high this has been ranked. Pete Dunne versus Tyler Bate for the UK Championship.
Woo!
James, you had this as your number one.
I did. There is no better example of the pure wrestling style than this match in NXT or WWE. Mm-hmm. It's just, they don't even really tell a great story, because the entire thing was just, I have the belt, you have the belt, let's wrestle and see who's better. They don't really hate each other that much.
No, they were pals in every other promotion.
That's why, because Tyler Bate, he's like, oh, I think they've had some promos around it, but it was all very parallel. It never actually connected, but the match itself told you all you needed to know.
It was
this one of these guys is a sick, sort of like twisted, brutality-based fighter, and one of them is an athlete who attempts to defeat his opponent through just superior stamina and strength.
Yeah.
And that's really what I like. I don't think there's anything else I can say when I watch this match. It's not, I don't care that Pete Dunne kicked his dog or whatever. I'm just like, I just want to see one of them win.
No, it's amazing, Sarah, when you think a couple of months before that, the two of them were fighting in town halls in like Kilmarnock. I mean, Tyler Bate fought Kieran Kelly a couple of months before it, and then they were in Chicago. It shows how far they'd came, and they, you can tell that by how well they performed and how much it meant to the two of them.
Oh, I mean, absolutely. I mean, like you say, like, Tyler Bate was fighting Kieran Kelly. It was like an SWA show, wasn't it? Or like,
I think like Kilmarnock or
something. Or BCW, like one of the two. And you just, going from that to that on like such a high calibre, it made you absolutely proud. I mean, I remember sitting watching this match and like remembering it was a rematch from like the inaugural tournament when they were just starting kicking off. There was no NXT UK brand. There was just a United Kingdom champion. That at this point, you didn't know what was going to go on with the actual championship that had been given to Tyler at this particular time. I actually stated like before we started recording, like how different that these guys look in comparison. Just in that, this was only like a couple of years ago as well. It wasn't even that long ago.
No, it's barely even.
And it's how different the Tyler looks, how grown up he looks, and how Pete looks a lot older as well. They've molded, but from a British standpoint, I mean, I don't think there was a single person in the whole of the United Kingdom that was sitting watching this and wasn't feeling a moment of pride that these guys were putting out an absolute stellar match, and it got Match of the Year. Like we were saying that, it was like May time, I'm pretty sure this
was. It was
May, and we were also saying it's a Match of the Year contender, and it wasn't carried through till the rest of the year that ended.
Now, David, I'll think there's certain things you can see in how WWE presents matches that make you think they're taking this very seriously. On an NXT TakeOver card, not even a big 4-1 at that point in time, it coincided, it was just May in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And they bring JR out to commentate.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it makes this match, that is a very effective pairing of JR and Nigel McGuinness in this contest. Purely because they're two voices you don't expect to hear next to each other, but they also do their best to get across a sense of legitimacy when it comes to this match. And I think James touched on that, and it's a very important point. For my money, the Bruiserweight is the most effective gimmick in professional wrestling today, because he's not good, he's not even evil, he's just a force of nature. He's a man, like James said, who goes out to win every single match he goes into, and it was JR Nigel's like, oh, ah, like every time we like manipulated a join or anything like that, that just sold. This was maybe my first exposure to Pete Dunne, because I wasn't an avid watcher of the UK tournament, but it sold to me just how dangerous that man can be, and I was very impressed.
Yeah, Scott, I mean, Pete Dunne, mm-hmm. It's freakish how young. Yeah. I mean, I know Pete Dunne's not exactly old, but Tyler Bate.
It's disgusting. Tyler Bate was younger than I am. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like to think of
myself. 22, isn't it?
He's 22 now.
Yeah, he was 28 20 during this
20
match.
20 is the time of the match.
Yeah. 20 is the time of this match.
He was like younger 23, than me.
The parallels, when you saw the wee video package before the match, is parallels between myself and David Totney, and there's a man who felt he should have won a championship rightfully and can't believe that he lost it to someone else, so goes into the rematch.
I can't believe you're so comparing David Totney to Tyler Bate.
He's David Totney versus Tyler Bate. I'd love to see that.
Oh, I don't know how Pete Dunne say, like, I can't believe I lost to Tyler Bate, and I'm watching him hold what should be mine, which is similar to how I felt to David Totney when he stole this championship from me. The Royal Rumble, those are sad times. I'm better now.
But it's like you're saying, it's like James is saying, it's just a simple story.
Yeah.
Man has title, man wants title, men will fight for title.
And pretty much it.
It's like what I've been saying all along. You don't need complicated, intricate plots with a higher power or anything like that to have good
example.
Yeah, to have good wrestling.
David, it's interesting because you actually rated this the lowest out of everybody in this panel.
True.
We've got an overall score of 148, so your rating of 9, of your 9th best match, wasn't exactly the worst.
But I think it's my fondness for the women's division really is where NXT shines for me, and I think I ranked 3 women's matches above this.
Yeah, yeah. Bailey Sasha. Mm-hmm. Bailey Sasha. No, not even one Bailey Sasha. Oh, yeah. You had quite a lot of the women's matches.
Yeah, and I think it's the fact that I was underexposed to the UK product compared to a lot of the other guys at the table here. But if there's one match, and actually watching it again recently, that's going to make me go back and explore the UK product a lot more in depth, and especially the back catalogue of Pete Dunne, who, like I say, I think is the most effective character in wrestling today, is definitely this match. So ranking it 9, it's like ranking it 9 in the greatest of all time. You know what I mean? It's still an exemplary match, just in a personal level, from a personal connection to it. I'm not as invested as probably everyone else.
It was just good, because it showed how much they were taking or seen seriously to book it on such a big show. Yeah, look at the other matches on the show. You had that, you had AOP DIY. Say that.
Until Pete Dunne loses to Walter, has he not got one of the longest undefeated? Is he undefeated?
No, he's lost.
Longest championship reign.
He's lost in NXT TV, I'm pretty
sure.
Yeah,
he has.
Yeah.
He got pinned at Orleans in that. When Roddy turned on him.
Yeah.
Right, okay, yeah, but he's got his championship ring. Coming up 600
longer
days
than
or something.
Than
well past that. Stephen. Well past that.
No, it was like 5-6 something last
Stephen, time. Just what you were saying, when a Chicago crowd is chanting UK over and over again, that is a like, moment. That's a
weird little tweet of JR, and JR's been one of the people that says maximise your minutes. Like, they may not have had as much exposure to the US audience than we well known to work for us, but like the fact that they eventually got the Kurdish chance to fight Forever and UK, the fact that they voted for this match, and this is the match that everybody remembers from this show over the DIY AOP Larrys. A lot of people only would probably remember that for the angle of that, which I won't get into before.
Correct myself. Pete Dunne has now held the UK Championship for 643 days.
Jeez.
And counting.
Plus!
You talk about how young they were. Like, I think that's what kind of plays in this, because Tyler Bate is so young, so he's constantly going for these high spots. He's going over the outside, coming off the top, and he goes for one too many, and that's when he gets caught, and that's where
that's it.
He's doing
for. That aeroplane spin is a thing of beauty.
Yeah.
It's the fact that it's like picks up speed, and you're like, is he ever going to stop?
So
how did you not get this? And then you see him stumble around going, oh, okay, there you go. He is actually human.
I need to ask the panel a very serious question.
Oh.
Pete Dunne versus Walter. When is that?
It's going to be at the next. It's
supposed to be in New York.
Spoiler alert, it's going to be the next takeover show.
So that'll be just after Brexit happens, maybe. So you think Brexit culminates with an Austrian getting the UK championship? Is this acceptable?
Oh God.
Before James goes all Brexit on us, I think we should.
Brexit James.
Full disclosure, I do not support Brexit in any way.
I think we should
Brexit
have
James BJ.
I think we should have a bit of a drum roll as we're about to announce our top match.
Not too much, not the sound.
It's a match which got a total of 163 out of 168.
Nice.
It was that universally liked across our panel. Only 3 people didn't vote it as number one.
And it's No Way Jose. Did they even find Alistair Black?
No. It is, of course, Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa, unsanctioned match, New Orleans.
Woo!
Had to be.
What a match.
Sarah, take us away.
Of course you're going to put me first, aren't you? I mean, like, this is the feud that broke my heart. I mean, of course. But no, unsanctioned match. Going into this, like, you could see even from the get-go, the referee was not wearing his traditional referee clothes. Ciampa was not wearing his traditional gear. And neither was Johnny Gargano. They were just in normal clothes. We're like, this is not sanctioned. Nothing to do with us. It's like, Kenwell, you guys just... we've had enough of you. Just, you do it. And we're going to have no part of this. It's like, whatever you do, if you die, you die. Right? That was the mentality that was meant to come across. But it worked because it just showed how much these two hated each other. Mm. I mean, the build-up from that ladder match to this... absolutely phenomenal. It's like it was just getting higher and higher and higher, and I don't think I've been more scared for anyone's safety in an unsanctioned match than I had for this one.
It's amazing, David, I'll go here, this one, when we compare this match to the match we just talked about previously, that was typical British wrestling technical masterclass. This wasn't exactly technical classic considering how good these two are technical wrestlers. It was just two guys who in storyline despised each other and kicked lumps out of each other.
This is wrestling storytelling at its best, and I also want to say that the unsanctioned match is probably one of the few protected stipulations in wrestling today. Whenever there's an unsanctioned match, you know that stuff is about to go down.
It's when you get the popcorn out.
Yeah, yes. Exactly. And it's like, it was just the constant callbacks throughout the match, the storytelling, the chemistry that both guys had, the fact they were exposing concrete, the finish with the knee brace, all of it just blended perfectly together in this brutal, brutal mix of blood, sweat and tears. And the fact is that we went into it and you kind of knew that Johnny was going to win, because this was also for Johnny Gargano's NXT contract. Mm. However, it's like what Gary was saying, a good match tricks you into thinking either of these men can win, even if you have an inkling where the story's going. And that's what happened here with Ciampa and Gargano.
Yeah. When I got some listener feedback, Scott, there were so many moments a lot of people said that was a callback to this match. And some of the ones I kind of think of, I believe it was this one where they had the guy, the fan in the crowd with the sign.
Oh, and he ripped it.
And he ripped it, and then Johnny whacked him. There was, of course, the finish with the knee brace into the Gargano escape.
The sit down, like the Cruiserweight Classic, like callbacks are plenty in this.
It's just everything's done so perfectly. It's just peak NXT at this point.
We joked about how hard it was to rank these. When I went into the rankings, I immediately scrolled down to my Ciampa v Gargano, New Orleans number one. Like, didn't even have to question it, because for me personally, the Gargano Ciampa feud around this time, best story WWE has ever done. Like, maybe in the top five ever. This is the best in the last 5 years for me, because I don't think, and the reason I put this number one especially is all the matches we've talked about, I haven't been invested in the story at nearly as much as I was for this one. Because like you said, like, Johnny felt like he needed to win to get for his contract. This is also WrestleMania weekend, during the time of call-offs. He could believably build the heat, even more nuclear heat on Ciampa than he already had, and he really had it, and let Johnny go up, because they'd had, even Daniel Bryan was still GM, he teased, oh, I'd love to have Johnny Gargano on SmackDown.
Yeah, James, I think it's just shows the quality of this match. When you look at kind of our rankings, these two have had three matches in the last year. This is both the only one of these two that we picked, and when you look at the other big match that happened on this card, the six-man ladder match for the North American title, it just shows how good this actually was. When you look at the competition it's had to kind of for top matches, how unanimously we picked it.
It's far and away the best Gargano Ciampa match that has ever existed, and that includes their work as a tag team. And it's far and away at least one of the best matches to ever take place on WWE television. That's a big ballpark, given that that goes back to, you know, Austin, Bret Hart, that goes back to Shawn Michaels, Undertaker. This is one of the best matches I've ever seen.
It's just so good.
Great! And the thing is, like David said, it's not like an unsanctioned match can ever be twisted in any way. Like, you know, John Cena would have I Quit matches where someone would say I quit and he'd still bar them anyway.
Yeah.
That's not part of the match. non-sanctioned match is just pure hatred that ends only when begrudgingly a referee ends it.
Yeah.
With like, is that a pinfall? This match, if I remember right, this match ends with a...
Taps out.
Taps out.
Into the Gargano escape.
There's a rope DDT, which then... changes. That's so complicated. There's so many.
The rope DDT is the big finish to the second match.
Yeah, that's
the big
this
finish.
This was just a tap out. Yeah.
But
is that when he brought the knee brace, the torment? And the knee brace?
He brought in was it the crutch, and then Gargano just kind of looked at him like your puppy would look at you when you've busted the puppy.
Don't hit me. We're best friends. It's like just forgive me. He's like, I'm so sorry I ever did this. You're like, I have bullshit.
That's just a great moment of pure. Because it scarred
it's
the Lion King.
It's when he realised he messed up, he went,
ah, crap. Yeah, Scar pleading to Simba not to attack him at the end of the movie. Because Ciampa is that character. He's evil and he's twisted. But don't forget Ciampa's motivations for attacking Johnny in the first place. It wasn't because he hated him. It was because he was injured and he was afraid he was going to get replaced.
Yeah.
You know?
It's interesting, Sarah, you said about the match kind of built up. But you kind of look at, from May to January, we did not see Tommaso Ciampa. Nope. It was literally just Tommaso Ciampa on Twitter being absolutely the troll that he is.
I destroyed your wedding pictures. There you go, guys.
It's the simple things.
Like, one of my favourite tweets of his is like, you playing as day two in 2K18 or 19 or whatever it was, and he says he recreated the thing for Chicago, and the tears on Johnny's face are so lifelike in these games.
It's just as.
I love him. It's a perfect match.
We talked about how the Dunn Bate match kind of overshadowed the ladder match, and that's what people remember. Like, you really thought when the ladder match opened the show, there was a fear of, could this overshadow this story that had been building for so long? And the fact that we both remember either of them, and like, we're like, neither of those matches get 5 stars, I'll be shot, and they both got 5 stars, well deserved.
Ciampa came out to no music this night, didn't he?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's
heel
heat. Look at your heel heat.
Yeah.
Super.
He didn't need the music.
You feel sorry a wee bit for kind of, you got Alistair Black and Almas on the match before. This is Black's big match for the title, but as much as people love Black, nobody cares about it. All they want to see is these two. That was also the question of, would they close the show with these two?
Yeah.
Would they have the traditional title match before? And they were right to close
it. That's the question. People were thinking, like, if Ciampa's going to win, then there's a chance Almas and Black will go on last, because there was a chance they probably wouldn't want to end the show with that, with the winner being booed at the building like that. Well, they've done it for WrestleMania a few times.
Yeah, they've done it for WrestleMania. Done next night.
Yeah,
I see that they did it for the very next takeover when Ciampa won.
Yeah, no, there's no way that this match couldn't have closed the show though. I mean, this is like the debate that we always have. Like, I know Ross likes to say that it's like the title match should really go on last. It's supposed to be like the big culmination of everything, but when a storytelling is so intense, how can you not make that close the show? I mean, even if it hadn't been for the title, who gives a crap? Yeah. It's like that storytelling, nobody can say that during this time that they were not invested in it. I mean, like, I was heartbroken from the night that it happened when he got thrown into the LED board, and I was crying. I was just like, oh my God, how can this happen? To then it all just coming around full circle. It's like, you can't even put it into words.
And we've talked about heart and soul a lot today. Sami Zayn, the heart and soul of the NXT men's division. Bayley, the heart and soul of the NXT women's division. DIY were the heart and soul of the NXT tag team division.
Yes,
so when those two break up, that is your story.
So, yeah. that's a very, very fitting way, actually. It's a very deserving number one, I think. And I think we're all happy that it was chosen to be our number one. Despite some of the competition, you know, we had a very very good set of matches to choose from, so it's very pleasing that one that's universally praised by both us, the listeners, pretty much near enough, so many of the listeners put Johnny Gargano as their MVP of NXT.
I mean, I think that should be the starting from end to finish, like, you see it starts out with Sami Zayn and it's continuing on with Johnny Gargano, like, he is Mr. Takeover, but Sami Zayn was the heart and soul of NXT, and it's now the passing of the torch. Who's going to be the next once Johnny moves up?
Somebody threatened that the two of them could end up finishing it a year later in New York, but that's for the next set of great NXT. That's for the next 5 years. We've done our best to kind of go over some of the best of the last 5 years.
It was so hard.
So many great matches. We've done a very good job of ranking them. All bar two of the 24 matches we chose got over 4 on the Meltzer scale.
Yeah, but what does he know?
He's a fraud.
And before
I formally predict that WWE and WrestleMania NXT, everyone but Hansen and Bull will lose their titles.
That's an interesting thought you heard here.
Can I make a point? Mm-hmm. This is a real thing of enjoy wrestling for what it is. Don't bother about going on the internet to find out if you should like or not.
Exactly.
Just like it for what you feel.
Spot on. Quirky, I think that's a very fitting point to end this
show. No, I don't want to end the show yet because I don't think we've talked about the reason we're all here today, and that's for a championship celebration.
No.
But it's not for you. I am sick and tired of you. And the rest of those idiots at Roscoe overshadowing the GOAT. Quite frankly, Scott, you've not been relevant at Roscoe until the last 2 months where you decided to rear your ugly head. I am sick and tired of being dragged down by that perpetual loser, Nathan Fisher. And Ross, if you're listening, I am sick of you having your name over the door. I am forming my own stable, the Four Goatsmen of ESSR. And I already have their names. Gary Kernahan, Derek Kernahan, and Stacey Smith, we are taking over. And to start that reign off with a bang, I am wasting no time to take back my baby. I am cashing in, spare change in the tin. So, Kwaku, if you would do the honours, let's get a question on this table.
God, I really hope you win.
You son of a bitch. Oh.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's now been official that David, the Goat Campbell, is cashing in his spare change in a tent contract.
Let's do it.
It's a good thing I have a question, David. I really hope you get this right. There was that speech.
Are you asking the question?
I have the question. Now, the question here, folks, I have it ready. That question is this. Kofi Kingston has recently done very well and got himself in the main event title picture. My question to you all is, how many pay-per-view appearances has Kofi Kingston made in the WWE? Nearest answer wins the bet.
What?
Oh. Is this pre-show or main show?
I'm not sure.
As part of a tag team or a solo?
I think it's just general. Just general appearances. How many appearances has he made?
Okay. God, my heart.
This is according to Pro Fight Database.
700? I don't know. Loads.
Look at the anticipation of this.
It's actually five because Xavier went to the, all the other ones.
I'm sorry, even if it doesn't work out, that speech alone was brilliant.
I feel bad that I didn't get that all on video though.
Closest answer wins the belt.
I'm putting a random number here and hoping for the best. This is for Goldie. Yeah.
Can I have the pen?
Oh. No, you can't have the pen.
See an answer.
This is preventing the cash in.
Give him the pen.
Most pay-per-view appearances.
To all our listeners at home, there is excitement in the studio. What's that? Not just silent.
Right.
Here we go. Do you want me to read out the numbers?
Champion.
Six.
Champion first.
Okay, what?
Scott.
I put 56. I don't know.
56.
Campbell. Davis put 60.
The correct answer is 90.
Yes!
Free time, baby!
And the over, Scott!
The Goatsman's reign begins with the champ!
Ladies and gentlemen, presenting...
This is the plan all along!
Eat, sleep, suplex, retweet, world champion.
There's no star but me! There's no star but me!
Time.
For the Four Goatsmen, baby! Kernahan, Smith, and Rhea Holmes! Roscoe, thank you for nothing. Goodbye.
On that note, I would
that
like
was
to
amazing.
I would like to thank my lovely panel today. Gary, Sarah, James, Scott, David.
And the goats! The champ!
You know what? I wasn't even the biggest heel on this panel today.
And of course. Quacku. Next week, we'll be talking about the history of NXT TakeOver before we go on to WrestleMania month.
GOATAMANIA, baby!
NXT UK.
That's okay. This is amazing. We've got a great month of stuff. Scott's face is priceless. We will hear you next week. From us, good night.
Bye.
Good
night.
Listen, cunts, I don't care what the fuck you think you're doing. Whatever you think is more important with your life, you honking bag of tips. You know what you should be doing? You should be going online, you should be subscribing, you should be listening to the back catalogue of Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet, whatever the fuck you're doing, that's what you should be doing. I don't care if it's your mum's birthday, I don't care if she's feeling contractions, get on it right now.
Sports Social Podcast Network. Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.